Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey, the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to this edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer. Joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everyone.
And Bishop Ben.
Hello, and what blessings to all.
I almost called him Bishop Mark. I stopped for a moment.
Well, I mean, in some circles, I guess I...
Right.
Maybe, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows these days?
Right.
Tonight we're going to talk about the topic we were going to talk about last week, but Pope Francis decided to head back home, so we preempted it to this week, which is resurrection. And no, Pope Francis didn't rise. We're talking about resurrection, what it means to us, and why it's important, and all that good stuff. Mostly because this time of year, you see a lot of people who, mostly people who are no longer Christian or atheist posting things like, you know, the resurrection doesn't matter, it's not important, blah, 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 blah. And so I thought it'd be a good topic for us to delve into here this close to Easter. And why we celebrate it, why it's important to us. It's one of the two major feasts in the church calendar, you know, Christmas being the first, the birth of Jesus, and then the second being resurrection. And so church puts a lot of emphasis on these two feasts, so I thought it would be a good topic for us to begin with and discuss. And kind of get some... answer maybe some questions that you might have concerning the resurrection. So we're going to start off with Bishop Ben and why resurrection is, why do you think the resurrection is important? What does it mean to you?
And what aspect, like religiously or is not like...
Well, however you want to approach the question.
Okay, well, we can look at it as... For me, as a religious person living the religious life, I look at it as there's some hope that there's going to be a heaven. But then also, too, that we look at it as we take it as Jesus rose and we see that we may have a resurrection from us going after death, going to heaven. And then you look at it as the lay person, you can look at it as, for me, it'd be like showing that there is truth in the Bible and there's truth in the story, and it gives you, what gives me more hope, gives me more peace of mind that it happened, that he's just not still laying in a tomb somewhere.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Absolutely. Reverend Mark?
Resurrection is one of those topics that, I mean, endless conversation, in my opinion. So, again, it reminds me of Christ's desire to drive home his point of what his life represented.
Right.
I believe it speaks to, because post-resurrection, Jesus comes and continues his work, continues the same mindset that he was born to bring, and that is who God is, who God desires us to be in the earth, lives that out, doesn't seek vengeance towards the oppression and to those that have wrongfully killed him. He willingly offers his life. And that offering of the life as a sacrifice we see from the time of his birth all the way until he literally is killed. And then he offers his life again. He gives up his desires so that he can continue to minister and to show who God is. You know, the true heart of God in the earth, in the midst of all of the craziness that transpires during Passion Week. And he drives that home, and then he affirms inside of his disciples that they can carry this message. Resurrection reminds us that God will come for us in our unbeliefs, meet us where we are, allow our lives to... We don't have to be perfect in order for God to reveal the majesty and the divine. Because Jesus, when he was raised from the dead, he met the women that were headed to the tomb. And even though they were sorrowful and doubting, he still appeared to them and showed compassion and love. Didn't sit there and go, "Oh, you terrible people,
right,
why don't you believe me?" Same thing with the disciples. He met them right where they were. And it speaks that there's a possibility of tomorrow's. You know, Jeremiah 29:11 is seen in the resurrection. And, you know, "I know the thoughts and the plans that I have for you, mm-hmm. thoughts of good, not of evil, to give you a hope and an expected end." So I could go on and on, but those are some of the highlights for me. It reminds me that when it looks like it could be over, when it looks like something has reached its totality, God has the final word. Just like in our own passing, in our own deaths, at the moment death comes for us is the moment eternal life and light wraps around us.
Right. I'm going to take it from the aspect of a skeptic to some degree, and the fact that, you know, Jesus spoke all this stuff, and he delivered what, you know, could easily be called prophecy throughout his lifetime. You know, he told the disciples, he told his followers that, you know, "Tear this temple down, and in 3 days I'll raise it back up," you know, those types of things. He prophesied about his death and resurrection several times. And so for me, the resurrection is proof that what he said was true. And that it's multi-layered for me in that if that was true, then all the other stuff he said was true too. You know,
yeah.
How we could better society, how we could better
right.
our lives and things like that are true. And so to me, that speaks to a level of confirmation, so that I can say, well, you know, my faith is not in vain. You know, I can hold on to this. But by the same token, I also look at it from a different aspect too, that in some ways, would that mean that if they were to, say, find Jesus's body in, you know, 20 or 30 years in some place in Jerusalem, does that mean my faith is no longer valid? And I would say no, because his message still stands that, you know, these are the things we can do to better our lives, to eventually achieve perfection. You know, the early Gnostic church really fought over this idea of bodily resurrection. And in many of their writings, I mean, they went to amazing lengths to, you know, twist themselves into pretzels to try to explain, well, what if Jesus is found, his body is found years later, you know, does that make him less valid, less of a prophet or a god? And you know, their whole thing was to minimize the resurrection and try to say, well, you know, Jesus didn't really die on the cross, or, you know, his disciples helped him escape, and, you know, all these elaborate stories to try to explain away the necessity of the resurrection. And I think that was because they feared the fact that someday his body might be discovered, and that would damage their faith. And so they had to have an out. But we're over 2,000 years later, almost 2,000 years later, and nobody's ever been found. We've had several archaeologists over the millennia who have claimed to have found the tomb of Christ and it be empty, you know. And with all of the archaeological focus on finding proof of Jesus' existence, finding proof of what the Bible says, and nobody's found it yet, pretty confident at this point that they're not going to find a body. And therefore, you know, it further confirms the story that Jesus rose from the dead. So for me, it's kind of a split thing. I do believe in the necessity of the resurrection. I believe it was necessary for Jesus's followers to know that, you know, he was what he said he was, that he indeed was the Son of God, that he was indeed spoke the truth about all the things that he talked about. And so I think that that was important for them. It's still important for us. That's my thoughts on it.
Well, and we're shown throughout Scripture of those moments of life, and I think the resurrection of Christ just, you know, caps, you know, icing on the cake, if you will, cherry on top, however you want to say it. But there's so many examples through Scripture of God coming and intervening to those things, or those moments, those scenarios and situations that are hopeless, to inspire faith, to inspire hope. You know, thank King David facing a great giant. You think of the flood coming and God offering a way of escape, and Christ coming to this place of my word, the things that I'm pushing, the things that I'm showing you, the purity of God's divine intervention into humanity to let humanity know that there is a heavenly parent that loves us. All of that to remind us that in moments of great persecution or a great trial or a great challenge, whether it's large scale or just our personal lives, that we can have faith and we can have hope that tomorrow will change.
Right.
You know, I as a pastor, and I know you as a bishop, and Bishop Ben, have encountered this multiple times over your ministry, where you'll sit with people and they just have convinced themselves, or they're trying to convince you and themselves and everybody else, that tomorrow's hopeless, that it's just not going to get any worse than it is right now. And you're going, but if we go to the full extent of that, again, you know, my earthly body transitions from this confined of where I'm at, it's immediately embraced by the light of eternity. You know, Revelation tells us that God brings total light to eternity just by existing. There's no sun, S-U-N, there's no sun. It's the presence of God. It's that divinity. It's that divine love. So if I, you know, if it does become to a place to where I must leave then I leave here, but I enter into something. I enter into grace. I enter into fullness of understanding. I enter into that spirit protected realm. And it resurrection teaches us that even though there is the absence of what we had envisioned, because you have to remember the disciples, many of the followers of Jesus, wanted him to take up earthly power and, you know, show Rome the door, make Israel this great kingdom, make their faith a great kingdom. And Jesus didn't do that. He resisted every opportunity for that, to teach the way of love, life, light, mercy, grace, compassion, so on. And that tells me that that is primary, right, at the heart of God. It's not the power. It's not the force that is within the heavens. It's the compassion and the heart of love. And all of those things, Jesus wanted to make sure that we knew that even though that seems to be out of our lives, what we had hoped for, something greater, something better would come, and it would come back to life, or it would come back and take on a whole new meaning,
right,
a whole new understanding, that our perspective would finally be enlightened. Because sometimes I can be a little dense, and I need God to really shake me good and remind me how much God is with us, and that God can guide us to those things we need to do.
Well, and I think too, it flies in the face of a lot of people's perceptions of faith, their perceptions of Jesus, because it's a different kind of power. You know, they're searching for this power here on earth, this, you know, the earthly power and wealth and prestige and all
that
stuff.
Which is all fleeting.
Right. All of that stuff that will rust and pass away, as Jesus said. But the resurrection shows us a different type of power. A power over death, a power over sin, a power over those things that hold us back in our daily lives. And I think that's important as well. And I think that's why a lot of people struggle to accept it, is because their heart is not in the right place. They're looking for, you know, power in a different way.
Right.
And so for them, it's a message that's kind of runs against what they want. You know, they want that fleeting power rather than an enduring power.
When you think about the power of God that is on display here, because the life of God overcomes even the hatred that put Jesus on the cross, the fear that put Jesus on the cross by the religious leaders, the people of the day that were afraid of losing power, their jealousy that put him on the cross, and so forth. All those things, the power of God shows that even those things could not keep light from coming to the world.
Right.
And power is so fleeting, because we see throughout history how, you know, you'll have great nations, great kingdoms, great leaders, great kings, and one way or the other, they start losing power. They're either defeated, other people come in and conquer, they self-destruct or whatever. But the message of love, grace, compassion, the message of divine acceptance, inclusion, the message of God has survived through all of it,
right,
to get to us and to say, this is the better way. Yeah, you know, power is what it is. It can be used for good, but it also, as we see, can be used for corruption. And to further some person's own desires over the desire of that which is sustaining. You know, we're taught that the fruit of the Spirit, that love, that the gifts from God, those are all incorruptible things that are given to humanity to receive, to give out, to experience, and they endure.
Right. I think the resurrection is also, you kind of mentioned it a bit in what you were saying a minute ago, is kind of the ultimate hope too. You know, so many people, because of their desire for power and wealth and that kind of thing, only focus on what exists here and now. And it's the hope that the resurrection gives us, the hope that there's more. You know, this isn't it. This is fleeting, but there's something more. And for some people, that hope is life-saving and necessary. You know, I know for myself, a person who deals with, you know, depression on a regular basis, hope is the only thing sometimes that keeps me going. You know, keeps me from imploding or falling apart. You know, is the hope that there is something better, that I'm not just working for what's fleeting. And that's why I like to say that Christians are supposed to be forever people. You know, we're to be constantly striving towards that which does not end. That kingdom that lasts forever, those things that will continue to be a part of our world, part of our being for eternity. And so for me, that two is an ultimate sign of hope, that if Jesus rose, then there is life after death. They used one of my favorite prefaces at Pope Francis's funeral the other day, and in it says, "Lord, for your faithful people, life is changed, not ended."
Yeah.
And for me, that is the ultimate sign of hope and power, is that, you know, when we step off of this mortal plane, there is something far more enduring than what we have right here now.
Yeah, and I spoke today at a memorial service where we thought about the depth of creation and the depth of God's plan for us both here and beyond. And one of the things that I was trying to draw attention to today was the fact that when you look at creation, you know, science, studying creation, just our simple observation of the beauty that surrounds us, the depth, you go to different parts of the world and you see things that aren't in your parts of the world. How science has discovered just how complex life is, and that as long as humanity has been on the earth, there are parts of the world we still don't understand or have never seen, you know, right. The depths of the ocean and stuff like that, and life that's discovered there and so forth. And in all of that, God reminds us that for what we can see, there's so much depth, there's so much amazement, there's so much beauty, there's so much awe that's there, that eternity far outweighs that.
Right.
But in all of that, God steps in and individually orchestrates people to come across our paths that will change them, that will give us, that will lend us their energy to get us from today into tomorrow or a week from now, whatever the situation is, a month from now, that those type of people, those type of energies in the world, those type of spirit that God has placed in the world, we never knew we needed.
Right.
But even in that, we're a part of that complex creation, and God orchestrates not only the flowers to bloom every spring, but our lives to be touched every day or in each season, that will remind us that the divine's hand, again, not only makes the flower bloom, but the divine's hand is able to guide us into where we need to be, into those situations that enable us to succeed. Yeah, we got to choose to cooperate with that. We got to choose to want to do it. But at least there is the ability for us to see hope for tomorrow. And I think that is such a comforting thing, because we get so hyper-focused on all that's wrong. And there's a lot of wrong in the world. There's a lot of things that are coming apart and crumbling. But do we ever step back and say, is it okay for it to crumble and something new be built? Is it something that we should fight for? Is it something that we should stand up, and it gives us the opportunity to have a bigger stage or something greater can be said? We have to ask those questions. And you and I have taught it many times. God can handle our questions.
That's right.
And God can lead us. But we can never lose sight of what you just said, that God can lend and send hope to us to get us from despair into that next day.
Right. Bishop?
You know, I was thinking, and you know, I want to take us back just a little bit back to the beginning of the podcast when we were discussing about the tomb of Jesus and his actual resurrection. You know, you made a comment, Bishop, that made me think about it a little bit harder here, about the archaeologists finding a body, if they ever did. To me, if they ever did, you have to think about it, they did find his body. There's always a caveat that says, hey, we found this body, but here's proof of his earthly ministry. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of people that say, well, Jesus never did exist. Here's just a story.
Right.
Well, if they found the body, then that would prove his earthly ministry.
That's true.
So that for me would reinforce more proof of him actually existing.
Right.
That would give me a deeper sense of more hope, more caveat into having more depth into feeling that my belief is true.
Right.
It'll give it making it more valid, if that makes sense.
It does. Absolutely. 100%.
But, you know, on the same token, too, like you mentioned, Pope Francis. There's also another comment that Pope Francis made during one of his little discussions he gave at St. Peter's Square. He said, in order for us to be a Christian, sometimes we have to be a messy Christian.
Right.
Too.
Right. And Jesus lived his life like that. I mean, right. Jesus went to the margins of society. He didn't go to the powerful and the rich and spend all of his time, you know, hobnobbing with them. He spent his time on the margins, you know, with, you know, tax collectors and prostitutes and sinners, people that were considered outcasts. You know, the Samaritan woman's a great example of that, in the fact that, you know, he went to these people that were considered lower than animals to many Jewish people, you know, and they were truly an oppressed group of people, you know, despite the fact that Israel, the Jewish people were being oppressed by the Romans, the Jewish people would also oppress then the Samaritans.
How about
and
that?
He went to them and, you know, said, you know, I'm here for you too. You know, you are not less than, you're actually equal to everyone else. And so I think that it's important too to remember that you know, Jesus taught us to get our hands dirty, you know, to get down in the gutters, to go to the people that are so marginalized in life, the people who are homeless, the people who are poor, the people who have no power or agency. And to, as Jesus said from that wonderful passage in Isaiah, to proclaim liberty to the captive, you know.
Right.
And I think that that's so important, too. And his resurrection shows us that ultimate freedom from captivity, you know, that the one thing that we fear the most is death. You know, anyone who says they don't fear dying is lying. We all fear it to some degree or another, whether it's the process of dying or whether it's the actual death itself. We fear it in some way. I mean, I'm happy right. to admit, you know, I don't fear death itself, but I do fear the process of dying. You know, I don't want to go through pain. I don't want to go through suffering. I don't right. want, you know, if I could be assured that I would go to sleep one night and wake up in the afterlife, then I wouldn't fear it. But knowing that there's a possibility that I will get old, I will suffer, I will die in that manner, that's what fear, that's what causes fear in me and anxiety in me. And so, but for me, I also know that there is hope after this. That, and so I don't fear death itself. I just fear the process. Go ahead, Bishop.
Right. And so, you know, I look at it the way, I feel the same way you do, but I'm going to take it one more step further. For me, is my fear is not the actual dying process, but the pain and suffering too, but also dying alone. There's not going to be anybody to care that I'm dying.
Right, right.
Nobody's going to care. Or they might find me, I may die one night and find me 6 months later that they haven't paid rent or anything.
Lord, I hope
not. They'll start looking. You know, that's my fear.
I certainly hope that doesn't happen. That's a rather stinky situation. But
right.
But no, I understand that.
We all have our fears. I'm sorry.
No, I understand that completely. We do all have our fears of death. And I think the resurrection helps us in some way to have hope that, you know, even though that fear exists, there is hope afterwards, you know, that right. it's not a permanent situation. So I think that's important to remember too. And, you know, the fact that Jesus spoke about his death to his disciples on so many occasions, and yet we find them after his death cowering in the upper room. And what does the Bible say? They were afraid. They even had fear after his death. And I'm sure many of them sat there in that room thinking, what if it was all for nothing? You know, what if it, what if, you know, we followed this guy around, we gave our lives to proclaim his message, and, you know, this is it, this is the end. And so for them, too, it was a matter of hope, because they got to see that what they had done and what they had spent time on mattered, that Jesus did conquer death and come back. And, you know, even to the point of him being willing to let Thomas put his fingers in his nail holes, his hand in his side, to prove that he had overcome death. That he had risen. It wasn't just a spirit or a manifestation, that or a group delusion, that it was something real, something tangible.
Yeah, and poor Thomas, he just gets thrown under the bus so often spiritually.
Right.
But, you know, Jesus allowed him, and Jesus didn't harp on him needing to see that. And because, you know, Christ, from the moment of his resurrection until his ascension, he had to spend a good bit of time affirming within the disciples just how much, you know, God needs them, how much the message that he had been preaching for a while had was true, even with his resurrection. Because you have them probably sitting there, you know, wondering, are they next? You know, are they, right. you know, will they be drug away just as Christ was by the leadership and the authorities of the day?
Right.
So that was part of it. And then Jesus is telling them, you know, hey, I'm back, guys, you know, and now I need you to go do stuff. You know, you go do things that, hey, think about this, you know, you go do the things that I told that the world needed and showed you, and you go do those things that led me to my death.
Right.
Go do those things. And so they, you know, some of these are young people. The disciples are very young, and their whole lives are ahead of them. And Christ saying, okay, now I know you believe. There are some holes in your belief. Now I'm affirming and bringing you hope for tomorrow. Now go do that stuff. And there was a selling out at that moment to the message that he had to prove to them, and I believe it was being solidified inside of them, that what I'm asking you to do is to raise up people that are equipped with divine love over swords and shields and spears, and really driving that home. I want you to go and speak to the world. You know, how often he told them, you know, go into the world. As he was ascending, he said, go into all the world and preach the gospel. This good news, this hope, go to all people. He wasn't restricting it. He wasn't stepping back going, you know, if they're black, don't talk to them. Or if they're white, don't talk to them. If they're gay, don't talk to them. If they're Roman, don't talk to them. He didn't start, you know, cutting everybody out. And, you know, you think about this, you know, there's parables, the stories, regarding the Samaritans and how Jesus interacted with them and offered them the same love and compassion as he was people of his own faith. And then, you know, healing the centurion servant, who Jesus was surrounded by zealots of that day, right, that even that if they walked by a Roman soldier, they were sworn to stab them. Right. And Jesus is over here listening to them, giving them audience, and healing the servant, who is a lover, but anyway, right, the centurion's person. And so it's just such a radical change, and Jesus is all in the face of doing it, but he's in the face with compassion. He's in their face with love and grace. He's not shouting at them. He's not yelling at them. You know, I get so tired of people bringing up the fact that, oh, Jesus flipped over tables in the temple. Yeah, he didn't do it every time he entered the temple, right, either. Right. You know, his default is not, let me find a table and flip, right, it, or let me throw something in your face. He was driving the point home to seasoned religious people that were leading folks down a path that was diametrically opposed to the heart of God. And they knew it, even from their readings, even from their writings, even from the Torah. They knew this is not how God intended for the people to live in the world. And yes, it drove him to righteous indignation. He wasn't around harming people. He didn't go around beating people upside the head. And I'm so tired of Christians using that as a default. Well, Jesus flipped tables. Well, sure he did. But he also preached with compassion and with grace and with the zeal of God's love. And while there are moments that we do need to flip tables in the face of spiritually religious and spiritually stuck up folks, flipping tables in the middle to people that don't know divine love was not the way of Jesus.
Right.
And I know we find that hard because we want to land on the Jesus that was combative in that sense, you know, in the temple. But how many times did Jesus refuse to pick up the sword?
Right.
How many times do we miss that fact? And, you know, Paul tried to drive it home by saying we do not wrestle with flesh and blood, but it's a spiritual thing. It's the heart, and that's what we have to focus on. I have no idea where I was going with all that, but there you go.
But see, I was going to carry on that. Remember, you had a good point. But also, this leads up to where we need, as Christians, need to focus and learn on the Beatitudes. People don't want to discuss the Beatitudes because they say it's woke Jesus. Well, the thing is, he was woke. That's the whole point, is Beatitudes are very important because it teaches compassion, love, Christ-like actions. Right. And if we cannot mimic what Christ has done for us, then we're in the wrong religion. We're in the wrong wrong job as clergy people.
Right.
We have to live, walk, breathe Christ and Christianity of what he taught.
And that's a great segue into what I just wrote down. And as Reverend Mark was talking, that's restorative grace.
Right.
One of the things Jesus did before and after his death was a moment of restorative grace. You know, before his death, you know, here he is on the cross, and he gives us two great examples of restorative grace from the cross. The thief who took up for him there on the cross against the guy who was railing and yelling and gnashing his teeth. And Jesus said, despite what you've done, despite your shortcomings and failings, you're going to be with me in paradise. And then one of his last and final words was, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do. And those are moments of restorative grace. And then he comes back after the resurrection, and one of the first acts he does is to sit down and have a meal with Peter and restore Peter.
Yeah.
You know, the three times he asked Peter if he loved him, to cancel out, as it were, the three times Peter denied him the night of his arrest. And so, you know, this idea of restorative grace is so very important in the underlying message of the resurrection, too. You know, that was one of the things Jesus felt was so very important. He made it one of his first acts returning from the grave, was to restore Peter. And so restorative grace is an important thing that we have to practice as well as Christians. And that's how we practice the message of the resurrection, is in that restorative grace. You know, being willing to offer people grace, maybe that haven't been the nicest people in the world. Maybe they haven't been, as loving and compassionate to others as they should be, but giving them that opportunity to have restorative grace. And it requires a give and take. You know, Peter had to say, yes, Lord, I love you,
right,
to receive that grace.
That's,
you
right,
know. So it's not one of those things of, if it's a person who refuses to accept culpability, that we go, oh, okay, I'm going to give you restorative grace anyway. It requires a give and take. You know, they have to want that restorative grace. But it's still important, because I know so many people today that no matter what a person may do to try to apologize, try to make amends for things that they've done that hurt others, they go, nope, sorry, you hurt me once, you're done. You're gone. Yeah. There's no hope for you.
Right.
And that's not the message Christ gives us. And so I think it's important that we keep that in mind as well.
And those people, and the hard part about it is, you know, we step back and we go, well, I did what I was supposed to do. Well, you have to continue to do that.
Right.
We have to continue to live in restorative grace.
Right.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that that person has intimate access to my life. It means that in all opportunity, and if there is an opportunity, that is, that I still give that same grace, even if they rejected it over and over and over and over again. Because God never rejects us. God never says, no, I don't love you anymore, because, you know, you didn't listen to me that one time that,
right,
I was trying to get your attention, and right, you royally messed up, so now you're done. No, we don't have that. We have, okay, you don't want to receive that grace that I have. You don't want to receive that we can restore our friendship or restore the situation, whatever. Okay, that's fine. But in a year, 2 years, 3 years, they decide to circle back. Absolutely. That grace is still available. And that's a hard thing to practice, because we want to go, because we're immediately rejected by something that maybe it took us a while to get to, of forgiving that person or getting to that way of extending grace. I have watched for years things that I've planted in other people, even in my first pastorate, the opportunity to speak into someone's life. And it wasn't till years later that they came back, thanked me for what I said, said, you know, I really needed to heed that. I didn't until years later, but I finally have, whatever. That seed is planted. That's a spiritual seed. It never dies. And we can trust the Spirit of God to water it and make it come to life. So, you know, it's not a one and done.
Right.
And, you know, Jesus, as you said, spent time over post-resurrection to restore them and spend time with them because they were pretty messed up, the mm-hmm. disciples.
Yeah. Well, they had been through that traumatic events of Good Friday. I mean, having to watch this person that they believed was the savior of the world die. And I mean, that impacts you tremendously. So it took time to kind of shore them back up and to make them feel like they were doing the right thing. So yeah. Bishop Ben, your final thoughts.
Well, I was going to say, you know, death during the thing of resurrection, have hope that there is a heaven. There is a peace of mind. There's restorative love. You know, just have the peace of mind that we all have some place to go after we pass, you know. But keep the faith of compassion, love, and mercy. And I'm going to steal a line from Pope Francis that I'm going to use. You pray. I pray for you. You pray for me, please.
Right. Amen. Reverend Mark?
And I think that is an amazing mindset to have is, you know, we are here for one another. We're here to bring life to each other, just as Christ taught us again, post-resurrection. I'm here to affirm that the life that I was speaking of isn't just for naught. God is now driving home the point that this is the way to go. You know, this is the way.
Right.
And this is the hope for humanity. It's this way of living. And, you know, ministered a couple of weeks ago, imagine if we had Christ's response post-resurrection, not to seek vengeance in the world, not to seek retribution, but to seek the desire that people would know that, you know, Jesus coming to them and just going, peace be with you, multiple peace be with you. You know, do you love me? Do you love me? Because I love you. Do you love me? And seeing that restoration. So I hope people really dwell and meditate on some of these things that we've thrown out there tonight.
And that's how we live the resurrection in our daily lives. You know, by having that hope, by having that willingness to follow the teachings of Jesus, to try to be light and love and hope in the world around us, in a world that right now seems so dark and it seems so bleak. Yet, we can be that beacon of hope and light and love in the world around us. Sometimes it's a matter of just changing one heart or one life at a time. You know, it's not a matter of trying to convert the entire world or trying to change the entire world, but rather trying to be that that beacon of light and love and hope in the world to one person. And if we can change one person's life for the better, we've done something amazing. And that can be something that can spread. And I think that that's what we need to focus on today more than anything, is living the resurrection, living that hope. Because these things in the world do pass away. This won't last forever. And, you know, thankfully that if we keep our eyes on the teachings of Jesus and do what he asks us to do, we have hope that there is something more permanent, something that lasts forever, that we can focus on. Well, my friends, this has been an amazing podcast as usual. Thank you, Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben, for being here tonight and being a part of
it. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for hosting us.
I always enjoy it. It's always a blessing. And thank you all for joining us tonight online to record this. I don't say this very often, but if you'd like to join our studio audiences, we record these on Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And you can join by going to younow.com/Bishop Greg. It's younow.com/Bishop Greg, Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and be part of our studio audience where you can ask questions and make comments that will be a part of this podcast. So do consider joining us for that. Next week, we're going to talk about gender and sexuality in the Bible. A light topic. I watched a video by Dan McClellan the other day. I love Dan McClellan. He's a great scholar of the Bible. We'll forgive him for being a Mormon, but he's a great scholar of the Bible. And he did a video the other day on the 8 genders in the Torah and the Talmud. And so that's kind of our impetus for that one. And we're, of course, coming up on Pride Month in June, so I want to kind of get ahead of the game a little bit, talk about some of these issues before we hit Pride Month, so that you have that information going into a month of celebrating who we are and celebrating the fact that God made us as we are. So until then, till we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.